This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, Mike Lombardi, getting some well-deserved vacation time in. But in his seat, we have another Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa, of course, VSiN host. You know him, you love him, and you have been doing the rounds over the last 24 hours, my guy. You've been very busy on VSiN.
Well, yeah, all the flagship shows, the prime time, follow the money, and now get to sit in for you with you for 2 hours on Lombardi Line. I have to tell you, Michael, that's a working vacation, though. I mean, he's killing it with Femi on the GM Shuffle. Monday's episode was off the hook.
It was really good. And it was funny, JVT in here tweeting at Michael Lombardi, hey, I thought you were on vacation. What are you doing still working? Why am I in this chair if you're not on there? So good stuff. I'm excited when he comes back. When Michael comes back from Utah, he's going to be in Las Vegas with us in person and do the show for a little while. Want to make sure we've got lots of NFL, obviously, to get to today, some NBA news and notes, but college hoops is kind of reigning supreme right now with all of the games that are going on in conference tournaments. It's a big quarterfinal day, and we have three games that are about to tip off momentarily. So, Mike, want to get your thoughts on some of these, starting with Wake Forest and Miami. Miami from 5.5 now to 6.5-point favorite, it looks like, 157.5. And Wake, of course, knocked Syracuse out yesterday. We'll get to Jim Boeheim in a moment.
Yeah, coming off the big victory, they met February 18th in Miami. Miami covered as a 6.5-point favorite, 96-87. I think Miami's the best team in the ACC. I think they've been the most consistent. I know Duke's peaking right now. NC State looked great last night. The number here is probably pretty fair. You get two, you know, I always say it's tough to bet against the North Carolina teams when they play in Greensboro or they play in Charlotte. There's a big advantage for those in the quad there, those four teams. So, you know, up to 7.5 here, Miami. You have to understand Wake's got a little bit of a home crowd there. Here, I think it's a tad high. I passed on this game. If you told me I had to make a choice, I'd probably take the 7.5 with Wake.
Yeah, and it has, like, that number's just grown and grown, it seems like. So the higher it goes, maybe the points are of interest. Miami, will say, though, won 8-9 coming into the conference tournament, which did include a pair of top 25 wins, but I certainly get the perspective being there in the Carolinas. In the Big East, also at 9 a.m. Pacific, supposedly tipping off, like, I'm looking at all the TV screens to see if we're missing anything, if it has or not. On FS1, this one at Madison Square Garden, St. John's against number 6, Marquette. And this number has gone up a lot in Marquette's favor as well. I want to say up to 8 right now.
They just played 5 days ago in Milwaukee, and they couldn't cover the big number. Tell me why this number, this total, Stormy, 162.5. What am I missing here? They played a 190-point game. And they played a 181-point game. I mean, don't you have to just play the over here?
Well, and in that game played 5 days ago, the 96-94, that was a total set in like the mid-150s,
I believe. Almost 100.5, I think. I think you autoflex here and play the over here. And if you know, you can adjust in game.
People clearly are. It's gone up like 3 points since this morning. So it keeps on going.
I have a futures ticket. I'm high on this Marquette team now. They're not the top defensive team, but they can score with anybody. I got them at 28-1 here about a week ago. I still think you can find them out there around 25-1. I mean, they're all the way up to number 6 in the polls, but I think they'll be a tough out in the tournament.
Any concern with a number this big at the now 8.5 that we're seeing as tip-off approaches here, especially considering the way they lost a 10-point lead in the last 30 seconds of that last meeting with St. John's?
Yeah,
they won the game by 2, but...
Yeah, they were only a 3-point favorite when they played at Carneseca just after the first of the year, and they covered that number by 11. I couldn't take the points here. Let's play the over, though, and have some fun. I'm not an over player, so let's do something different and watch the points go up and down.
Life's too short to bet the under, as they say. Marquette 17-3 in league play. St. John's 7-13. 1 seed versus 8 seed in this contest. But yes, over money is being taken and could very well be the side based on previous meetings this season. In the Big 12, quarterfinal, Iowa State and Baylor. Baylor 4.5-point favorite, total around 134. Heard you this morning that you like Iowa State in this spot.
Well, I'm concerned now because I see in our preview, Will Hill's on the other side here. He's on Baylor. We're going to have him on.
That'll be a nice debate.
In about 25 minutes. Well, he's super hot. He's 2 games up with 10 to go in Matt Heumann's Friday night college basketball contest for a right to win the Cabana here during the summer at Circa. Not quite the $25,000 payout of the football one. But I just think this is a bad matchup for Baylor. I mean, they were two 2.5-point favorite when they went to Ames. Iowa State beat them by 15. Then on senior day at Farrell 5 days ago, Iowa State was in full control the whole way as a seven-point dog there. I just think it's a real bad matchup. You might argue it's tough for Iowa State. You beat them three times. You got to turn around. But let's not forget, these guys from Ames, this is a three-hour drive to Kansas City.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a little bit like a home
this
game.
This is Hilton South, they call it, to go down there, whether it was Kemper or it's T-Mobile. I think Kansas and actually Iowa State over Kansas State has the second biggest home court there. I love the Big 12 tournament or the Big 8 when it was. I thought Kemper was the greatest site. You know, the ACC always moved around. This has been a solid site. I know they went to Dallas for a few years when they expanded to the Texas and Oklahoma schools. I think this is one of the great venues and great conference tournaments. It's the best league this year.
Absolutely.
Oklahoma loses to Oklahoma State, but they could knock out anybody on any given night. TCU, Kansas State's a great game tonight. All of them are great matchups. This is a hell of an appetizer at 9:30 in the morning Pacific time that we're going to get to see while we're on air.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a ton of fun. And I saw this note this morning also, by the way, in the Big 12 tournament. Teams laying 4 points or more has been a risky proposition, so this helps you out. While favorites are 28 and 11 straight up since 2014, just 14 and 25 against the number. Oklahoma State also later in the day getting 6 points against Texas. They kept it close against Baylor and K-State recently, so maybe the plus points worth a look there too.
I think also this Iowa State's a team you know them by halftime. Because of the way the defensive style they play, it's hard for them when they get down 6 or 8, but in the same time they can protect those leads. I don't mind, if you can find plus 2.5 first half here as well as a first half play as opposed to a full game play.
The favorite in the league and the defending tournament champions in the NCAA tournament, Kansas, Bill Self. We got news a little bit before the show began that he was hospitalized dealing with an illness. He's okay right now, but not going to coach today's game, which is notable because they're not sure what that means moving forward in the conference tournament or beyond either, but hospitalized as of right now.
I think it might be telling later in the tournament whether he can continue on or not. Different situation than what happened with Texas Tech with Mark Adams, him being removed from the team, suspended, whatever. He's probably all done there with some of the off-the-court things and statements and actions. I think that was very disruptive to their prep for the tournament, and it showed last night against West Virginia. I don't think this is a big effect today, but as you go on in the tournament, take note of whether Self will be on the bench tomorrow or Saturday.
And again, in the release from the university, they did say that Self is doing well and recovering. He's, quote, receiving great care at the University of Kansas Health System. So hopefully he is okay in general, let alone to be able to rejoin his team. But, you know, sending our good thoughts his way. Also, in the coaching sphere, Jim Boeheim, done as Syracuse's head coach after 47 seasons, second most wins in NCAA history, trailing only Coach K, fourth most NCAA tournament wins in history as well. The last time Syracuse had a different head coach, Gerald Ford was president. So it's been a while. He's been there 17 years longer than I've been alive.
Yeah, think about when the Big East was just coming to prominence, when it formed and immediately became a hit. Before the ACC was the dominant conference for decades, you know, when Krzyzewski started to build the Duke program, I mean, he's outlasted everybody. Yeah. He's outlasted John Thompson, long gone, Bill Rafferty in the booth. Rick Pitino's had five other jobs, maybe more than that. I can't count them on two hands. But you think about it, Raleigh Massimino, Louis Carnesecca, some of them are no longer even around. He survived. I do say 47 years, 12 conference titles. The five Final Fours feel a little light. Maybe the story on Boeheim is different if Smart doesn't hit the shot and they win it in 87. One of the most memorable games of my youth, and I was a huge North Carolina fan, Dean Smith fan, was that East Regional Final at the Meadowlands, or Brendan Byrne, what they called it at the time. Carolina was ranked second in the country. UNLV was number one. They make the Final Four but get eliminated by Indiana. Carolina was a six-point favorite to Syracuse. They just couldn't stop Ronnie Cicely that day. That was the Ronnie Cicely, Derek Coleman team, Sherman Douglas, you know. But it was a great regional final. Syracuse built up a big lead and held on late, and then they lose. But interesting, I mean, he was a guy that will be known for his zone defense and never changing it. And a lot of opinions on Jim Boeheim as a person, but certainly the tenure, second longest all time to Jim Phelan at Mount St. Mary's, who coached there 49 years.
Yeah, the longevity, really incredible. And I mean, at 78 years old, too, probably time, especially when you consider Syracuse largely – I mean, mediocre regular seasons, made up for it a little bit with tournaments, you know, went to the Sweet 16 a couple years ago, but probably time and just a great overall tenure, I would say. Former player and current associate head coach Adrian Autry immediately is going to take over the gig now.
Yeah, he's been on the staff since 2017. Remember the guy that's at Washington? He was the coach in waiting, the assistant for 20 years, and he got tired of waiting, took the Washington job. It's amazing the ACC stormy in the span of 2 years. You lose Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski. And Boeheim.
Yeah, it's like the end of an era.
Jay Wright retires, maybe early, maybe he'll be back. I'm sure he'll be great in the booth. Who's the next wave of these coaches? I was thinking about it today, and I actually had Bill Self in that conversation. Who's the next in the next 3 or 4 years, the next wave retiring of the giants of the game? Maybe health's an issue there, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would hate for that to be the reason, but we just pulled the tweet up. BetMGM apparently says Jim Boeheim, the most overrated coach in history. So BetMGM, shots fired.
Are they contracting out Jeff Benson to do their Twitter now too? I mean, what an assassin.
Oh, not even just in basketball. The most overrated coach in the history of organized team sports. There you go. Calling him out.
Was he really that overrated? Does people think he's on the Mount Rushmore? I never heard anybody say that. I mean, I don't even know if he's on the Mount Rushmore in the ACC / Big East in his own conference. So
it is crazy, though, those coaches you mentioned. Like, that's my entire life, watching college basketball, and crazy to think that they're not a part of it anymore. We're going to step aside here real quickly. We will get to the news of the day in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, post and report from Diana Russini and more when we come back here on the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line, Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm in. And this morning in the NFL, Diana Russini was tweeting and reporting about the meeting that took place yesterday between Aaron Rodgers and the Jets brass ownership and general manager that flew out to California to meet with him and said that there is optimism. The Jets organization is on the brink of landing the future Hall of Fame quarterback. They felt it was important to meet in person, and Woody Johnson left the meeting excited and satisfied about a potential match. So obviously they are working on conversations about what that compensation would be, but this has gone, Mike, from something that seemed, hey, would they, won't they, pie in the sky, to more tangibly that this is probably going to happen here.
Yeah, I like your word, probably. I mean, don't all three sides want to get this done?
Yeah.
The Jets obviously do. They're all in. The whole organization went there to see him. I mean, they took like 40 people. I think Rodgers wants out of Green Bay, and I think Green Bay's ready to move on. I think they're confident enough in love to turn over the reins right now, and so I kept trying to broker this deal where Rodgers would go to Dallas, just because he's such a short-term option, and the Jets really think they're ready to win right now. I tried to get a deal where it would reunite him with McCarthy, because, you know, Jerry Jones' span is also very short. And just talking about how many more opportunities is he going to have, I think he has a team that's built to win now with a quarterback upgrade, and I think the Jets would have a huge quarterback upgrade in Dak if you could broker that three-way deal with Green Bay. Lombardi said, no, they're not going to settle for Dak in New York. They want Rodgers, and Jerry Jones isn't going to pay Rodgers he's pretty tight with the dollar. And
Jerry Jones also has a weird obsession with Dak.
He's not going to admit he's wrong on Dak either. Yeah. So this looks like all but done here,
right,
to me.
And it's one of those things where with Green Bay, like you mentioned, like they wouldn't be as publicly vocal about how much they love Jordan Love and that he's ready to go and that he's, you know, ready to be a starter in the NFL if they didn't feel this way, because we know all the back and forth that they've had with Aaron Rodgers over the last two off seasons. and that Jordan Love was the reason that, a quote unquote reason, as to why his flip switched the way that it did, because he wasn't getting the pieces that he wants. And instead, you guys are drafting my successor. And so for them to be as vocal in support of him and to accept and allow the Jets to go have that conversation with him in California, I think speaks volumes.
It's a strange imbalance of quarterbacks in the leagues, in the conferences now, if Rodgers moves to the AFC, right? I mean, the NFC is sort of bereft at that position. He comes in, Rodgers comes into a conference where he's got to compete to get to the Super Bowl against Pat Mahomes, against Joe Burrow, against Justin Fields, against Justin Herbert, in his own conference. And in the NFC, you look and you say, Jalen Hurts and then who? I mean, is Derek Carr the second best quarterback in the NFC right now? It's an interesting debate.
So I was going to ask you, in the conference, if Aaron Rodgers goes to the Jets, where do you think that they stack up? Like how significant of a jump is that? Because the Jets as an organization certainly made big strides and they were held back by the quarterback position. So
yeah, but where does Lamar go? I think that's still a big if. Does he stay? I know they came out in the report in Miami that Tua is their guy, the system's built for Tua. I don't know, but I think that Lamar would be a great fit in Miami. I mean, how long can you keep the next injury for Tua? Might be the last one, right?
It's a scary situation with Tua. I don't know about you, but when I watch him on the football field now,
I don't want him to play anymore. Seriously, yes. I don't want him to play anymore.
We all know it was 3 concussions. It wasn't 2.
Correct. So obviously Kansas City's still right at the top of the conversation in the conference. Is Buffalo's window closing? They haven't been able to produce in the playoffs. Obviously Jacksonville is a team that's on the rise. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati's right there still, right? They make the conference championship game. I don't know that you... Does Rodgers make the Jets a top 3 team in the AFC? Does he make them?
I think you could make that argument.
5 team? Are they 4-5? I'm not ready to say, I'm going to go bet the Jets at 12-1 or whatever they're going to come down to if they sign Rodgers at this point to win the Super Bowl.
And they're coming down. The numbers are, from 25-1 a week ago to 18-1. Now I'm seeing 16-1 at BetMGM. I don't know where you guys are at exactly right here at Circa on their number, but it's even just the thought of him coming to the Jets is continuing to push that market. So it'll be an interesting thing to follow, certainly. Why are you laughing?
Well, we got rope-a-doped with Rodgers before with Denver and all. I mean, you know, it's the Green
true.
Bay, Minnesota,
well, and that's
all
a big,
that, I mean.
But that's a big part of it, too, because a big reason with Denver was the Nathaniel Hackett side of things, and then that's
and
obviously pulling here, too.
Was reporting it was happening, and, you know, we actually made the move that it was happening, and it had to reverse quickly.
One good thing about this situation with Aaron Rodgers, though, I would say, because Nathaniel Hackett is here, while everybody else is going to be learning new terminology and the offense that he wants to have there, Rodgers is already going to have that. So that will make the transition a little bit more seamless. It'll be interesting to see how things play out. I want to make sure we get to your soccer plays, though, here real quickly, and we have some NBA news as well.
Wait, let's go to Ja first. I think this is very interesting because I want to ask you about it once you give the details.
Okay, so Ja Morant, Memphis Grizzlies star, obviously will not be charged by Glendale, Colorado police following the investigation of his actions at that local nightclub. We saw him have the gun on the Instagram Live, one of just a number of off-court incidences that Ja's been dealing with right now. The team announced he'll miss 4 more games at least. So that puts him at least out until Friday. But the NBA is still doing their investigations separate from that. And we saw the news with the CBA that if you have a firearm on an NBA premises, which would count as a team plane, if that is how he brought it, automatic 50 games.
Right. So I mean, they're just stalling the NBA decision here. I think that could be the full season. How did he get the gun to Denver if it didn't go on the plane? Obviously, the gun was on the plane. And I think that Memphis right now is hamstrung into suspending them until the NBA makes a decision whether they're going to clear him or not. I don't know if Memphis was viable in the West here. It seems like it can kind of be a two-horse race between Phoenix and Denver. And the LA teams are sort of on the periphery there. You know, the Lakers playing a little bit better now. Are they sustainable? Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Clippers have a lot of talent on that team as well. I don't think it's a positive sign, though. I would be in a fade Memphis mode right now if I'm a futures bettor.
Absolutely. And it's insane to think about. We heard about the players-only meeting that Steven Adams is talking to the group, and he's warning everybody, hey, let's be smart on the road. Everybody knows who he's talking about, and that it's Ja Morant. And then this ultimately is what happens. He did make a statement taking responsibility for his actions, saying that he's, you know, gonna figure out, what did he say, the best way to work on his overall well-being and deal with stress. And something we talked about with JVT on the show yesterday was, like, last season we all talk about how good Memphis was without Ja Morant, 20-5 straight up in those games. This season is not the same. 4-7 without him. They don't have a lot of those same depth pieces that they previously had. They have guys injured. They need him on the court, and they don't have him in what is a very congested Western Conference right now with a lot of opportunity and flexibility with those seeding numbers. So also yesterday, the Suns, Kevin Durant, injured in pregame warmups, and we don't know the level. I've seen some reports that they think it's a grade 2 ankle sprain, which could mean 4 to 6 weeks, but he's getting an MRI today. So TBD on the future of KD after his non-existent Suns home debut.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully for him it's not 6 weeks and they can get some sort of a rhythm going before the playoffs and he gets to play with his new teammates. I know they were 3-0 without him and won easily last night at home. You did mention the soccer. I have two soccer plays. So it's Europa today. Not as strong an angle as Champions League because it's not as much on the line, but they are first legs again as they get to the round of 16. So this, for people that don't bet soccer, Champions League are the top teams from each of the divisions or the top flight in each country come together and play in a tournament to become champions of Europe. Then the next tier, whether it's your 3 and 4 team from a league, if you're a major league, or your 5, 6, 7, 8 teams, play in a Europa, which is the secondary continental tournament. So they're down to the 16. But this is a first leg. So in soccer, it's a two match total cumulative score playing each at the other's home arena. First legs always tend to be lower scoring because teams are conservative. You don't want to get behind two goals going into the second leg. So they tend to be more defensive and nervy. Two matchups today that I bet. The first one, I call this the Blessed Union of Souls in Berlin. This is Union Berlin from Bundesliga against Union Saint-Gilloise.
That accent, incredible.
Oh, yeah, the Belgian stalwart. These two teams played in Europa Conference League last year. They both played in Berlin, 1-0, the Saint-Gilloise won, and then in Belgium, 1-0, Union Berlin won. This is 0-0, 1-0 written all over it, under 2.5. And then the other game is Real Sociedad, Real Saucy, I call them, from Ooh. Spanish La Liga, taking on AS Roma from Serie A, as Bruce Marshall said, who was on Follow the Money earlier. Also under 2.5, Jose Mourinho, the great Mourinho, the Portuguese coach for Roma, a very compact defensive style. I don't expect goals in this game either.
Awesome stuff. I thought hockey names were tough.
They're tougher for me.
Wow.
Tennis names are the worst. Tennis.
So much more still to come here this hour. Will Hill is going to join us next, and we'll get into Josh Edwards, NFL draft analyst, at the end of the hour. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're rolling along here on a Thursday. Remember, everybody, before you make your next bet, you need to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving each game? The betting splits page is updated with odds every 10 minutes, so you can see the changes in action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN's here to make you a more informed, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm on the desk as we welcome in friend of the show, Will Hill, at not the Will Hill on Twitter, VSiN contributor and handicapper. And we need to just jump in fast and furious before we can congratulate you on how well you're doing with the contest, because we have a game that is about to tip off in a moment. Iowa State and Baylor going head-to-head in the Big 12 quarterfinals in Kansas City. What you got here, buddy?
Yeah, I like Baylor, and I've been listening to the show. So Mike made some good points about Iowa State. You're going to get a good home crowd contingent here with Iowa State. I just think the reason I'm betting Baylor here is they were embarrassed 4 or 5 days ago on senior night. They got swept in the regular season. Now, you could say it's a bad matchup, and it might be. I might just be on the wrong side of this. But I think, you know, watching the game Saturday, I think the zone Iowa State played really gave Baylor some fits. I think seeing it twice in a week now will be a little easier to solve. And you got to give Baylor a little bit of a motivational edge here. I know they don't play much defense, but when you got a motivated Baylor team, you figure, you know, you could string together some stops. They're really good on offense. And just the fact that they were embarrassed so thoroughly on Saturday, I think gives them a little bit of a motivational edge. And that's sort of why I like them here.
All right, Mike, you got to go back and forth. It's a rumble.
What did they learn from the zone when they played on New Year's Eve in Ames and got run out by 15 points? I just think it's a bad matchup, Will. You know, I like Baylor. I actually think Baylor could make a deep tournament run here. I like them a lot. I mean, they were up 18 in the first half at the Fog, and, you know, that game, the whole world was on Kansas in the same. We opened that like 6, 7, 7, 7.5. It was a runaway here. I think this is just a great appetizer to start the day off at 9:30 Pacific, and you've been super red hot, so it gives me pause that you're on the other side. I just think it's a bad matchup here. Before we get into your other plays, I have a more of a macro question for you. When you're watching games, and reputations aside, are there any coaches that you have more confidence in college basketball at managing games, meaning about understanding 2-for-1s, fouling when they're up 3, these type of in-game strategies that you think maybe they're underrated that give you an edge when you have that team?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think I have more that I don't like than I like, mm-hmm. and I'm betting on one right now, a game that's going on, St. John's. I'm itching not to look at my phone because I got a first half line, so I'm hoping they were down one last I saw. I don't like the coach, though. I don't like Anderson. I think once they lose today, tomorrow, whenever it is, it'll probably be today, they're going to have a new coach pretty quickly. So he's one I don't like. There's a bunch I don't like. I was actually impressed. Woodson the other day, up 3, foul against, Michigan on Sunday. Drives me nuts when these teams up 3 don't foul. So, you know, I think Woodson has been impressive. Self is sort of a polarizing guy between the sharps. I know Allen Boston is a guy who's always been sort of down on Self, but I think he makes good adjustments, so I think he's pretty good. So, yeah, I got a long list of ones I like and I don't like, and it certainly factors into the handicap.
And hoping for Bill Self, anybody who's just joining us and might have missed earlier in the show, he is hospitalized, currently will not be coaching the quarterfinal game today, and we'll see moving forward if he's able to get out there sooner rather than later. Wishing all good things for Coach Self. And St. John's, by the way, so you don't have to check your phone, we have it
Thank
up here.
You.
20-16, St. John's leading with just under 10
yes,
minutes in the first
there
half.
We go.
To go.
Good
so,
update. You took the cue, too. That was very professional on your part. I appreciate it.
Got your back, my friend. Let's keep it in the Big 12. TCU and K-State going head-to-head. TCU, 2-point favorite in this one, minus 130 on the money line, total 146.5. Not tipping off until later on this evening, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. What you got?
I love this TCU team. The situation with Lampkin obviously is a concern, but to me, they're just better than Kansas State. I know Kansas State beat them in the regular season a month or so ago, but TCU was all banged up. I think when they got all their ducks in a row and they're healthy, they're good. It's just about as good as anyone. You don't go to Kansas and win by 25 or whatever points without being really good. And they can play different ways. They can play in the half court. They can play full court. They could shoot a little bit. Dixon's a coach who, look, he never went all the way with Pittsburgh, but to revive TCU, to win at Pittsburgh's not easy. I think he's a pretty good coach, so I think TCU wins this game. Kansas State's one of these teams. They're really good at home, bad on the road, so, I mean, it sort of falls in between here with a neutral game. I know it's, you know, in their neck of the woods there, but it's not that same home crowd they're used to when they're playing in their own building. So I will take TCU here. I think they win.
Well, underrated tournament, the Big East. I think it's terrific. You're sweating this game in Madison Square Garden. Next game on the docket after St. John's Marquette, UConn taking on Providence. Providence beat them at the Dunkin' Donuts Center back in January as a 5.5-point dog by 12. UConn crushed them as a 7.5-point favorite in stores, 87-69, in February 22nd. Similar line here, laying 7 with the Huskies.
I think this is a home game for UConn. UConn usually has a really good contingent in Madison Square Garden. And if you look at the matchup, and it's funny, UConn's two different teams. They were pre-conference regular season and during the conference regular season. Back in November, Thanksgiving, that, you know, the Portland tournament, they were absolutely, you know, unbeatable. They hit a low in conference play. They're back to being that team they were at the beginning of the year. And if you look at the last matchup, they killed Providence on the offensive glass. So I think when they make their shots, they're going to score points. And when they miss their shot, they're going to get a lot of these offensive rebounds. They out-rebounded them 40-20. I think they just have a monster advantage here in terms of the rebounding, get a ton of second chance points. And I think UConn will be motivated too. Hurley has not had a lot of success in Big East tournaments, hasn't won a March Madness game in the NCAA tournament. I think there's a little pressure on here on UConn and Hurley to at least get to a finals here, win a Big East tournament, win some games in March Madness. So I think they'll be motivated. Little home court advantage, and I just think it's a good matchup for him.
Here on the Lombardi Line with VSiN contributor and betting analyst Will Hill, at not the Will Hill on Twitter. I'm curious your opinion on this Duke-Pitt game. Pitt has been a really good covering team lately, but the number has grown and grown with people back in the Blue Devils here, a team that a lot of people are saying could be similar to how North Carolina was last year, a team that maybe didn't belong making the run that they did in the NCAA tournament that they did. Are you a believer in Duke as this number continues to grow, or what's your side?
I see the comparisons with Duke and UNC from last year, and they have played better recently. I just think this is a lot of points for sort of a neutral court game here. Pitt is going to be motivated. They probably don't feel like they're safely in the tournament by any stretch, and they can score. So, you know, they in Pitt games, they sort of keep both teams in the game, whether the favorite, the underdog. They couldn't put away Georgia Tech yesterday. That game got closer than it should have been. So they're bad as a favorite, but I like them as a dog. I think they score well enough to hang within this game. I think people are just betting Duke based on reputation a little bit. I know they've played better recently, but to me, there's some sixes out there. I think six is a lot in this game. I like Pittsburgh.
Let's switch to Chicago, the United Center, the Big Ten tournament. Ohio State built a big lead against Wisconsin and then had to hold on in the final minutes, win and cover there. They move on to play Iowa, who an inexplicable loss to Nebraska cost them the two seed. It cost them an extra game in this tournament. Ohio State comes in here. I was a little surprised at this line at 5. It's down to 4.5. You're taking the points with the Buckeyes.
Yeah, it got down. I saw some threes this morning, 3.5. Now it's up to 4.5. I think that's a lot of points. And it's funny you mentioned the Iowa-Nebraska game. Nebraska has that great win, and they turn around and they lose to Minnesota last night. So, boy, just strange. Iowa's one of these teams. They can beat anybody. They can lose to anybody. They play twice in the regular season against Ohio State. Each team won, you know, convincingly on their own home court. So I've been backing Ohio State a lot in the contest. I bet them yesterday. I think they're much better than their record. I think they're much better than the season they've had. Sensabaugh is a hell of a player. I think you get a little bit of a quickness advantage here with Ohio State. Iowa doesn't guard anybody. And look, I think sometimes when you underachieve in the regular season, you get to the conference tournament and you can just sort of catch your breath. It's a reset button. It's a way to erase a bad season in 4 or 5 days. So to me, I was talking about it yesterday. I think Ohio State at 60-65-1 was an interesting bet to win this whole tournament. In terms of the Big Ten, you'd have to win 5 games in 5 days, which is a lot. But can they get to, you know, a semifinal or final? I don't think that's impossible. So I think Ohio State's right in this game today, and I give them a good shot at an upset here.
Will, you've been incredible in Matt Youmans' Friday night contest. You have a 2-game lead with 10 picks to go. 2-game lead over Tim Murray, VSiN host of Primetime, and Jim Root from the three-man weave. I know VSiN college basketball savant Greg Peterson lurking in the woods as well. But you've had 150 games to choose from and come up with 5 picks, all played on campus games. Now you switch the format. The Thursday and Friday of the NCAA tournament, you only have 16 games to pick from now, and they're neutral sites. How concerned are you with the 2-game lead?
Look, if you're scared, buy a dog. I mean, we're picking college basketball games. It's not a big deal. I'm going to be betting these games anyway. So if you're if you have anxiety, if you're afraid to lose, if you're afraid to lose money, you're in the wrong business. So, hey, it's competition. I embrace it. It's been a lot of fun. So hopefully I can not pull a Kyle Shanahan. Hopefully I can run the ball, get some first downs, and get out of here with a win.
All right. Let's not with the 49ers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thanks for that, Will. And I was going to say, if you win the thing, just – I expect an invite to the cabana. That's all I'm saying. Okay.
We could work something out for sure. And that was a Falcons deal more than it was a 49ers deal with the Kyle Shanahan and the 28-3 lead. So that
I know, but it's still my coach. Okay. That's all I'm saying. All right.
Does he realize he should have challenged the Devontae Smith catch in the NFC?
Oh my gosh. All right. You're done. Bye. Cut him off. Elliot, get him out of here. Thank you, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Will Hill, just making me aggressive as usual.
Totally unintentional.
I know, but still. Don't get me fired up about my coach making bad decisions. He's done enough to me lately. We're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we'll get to a little more NFL talk, what some teams may or may not do in the draft, who stood out at the combine with Josh Edwards, CBS Sports. Next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, you guys are in for a treat because even a wager that misses can still be a slam dunk with BetMGM, an authorizing gaming partner of the NBA. Place an NBA one-game parlay wager with 4 legs or more, and if you miss a leg, you'll get up to $25 back. Just opt in to this promotion on BetMGM's app or website. With one-game parlay, you can make selections with a single NBA game, including team and player props. Opt into the promo, then place an NBA one-game parlay wager of 4 legs or more, and you'll get up to $25 back if you miss one leg. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Our guy Will Hill should be pretty pleased right now with a St. John's 32-20 lead over Marquette with 3 minutes to go in the first half. Stormy Bonantoni and Mike Palm.
Enough points. We need more. We need more points. We got the right team ahead because you expect a comeback here from Marquette.
Yes, exactly. You do. We are excited to continue some NFL talk as we bring in Josh Edwards, NFL draft analyst over at CBS Sports at Edwards CBS. Welcome in. Thanks for doing this, Josh.
Yeah, of course. It was fun to have everybody kind of interested in the draft this past week. But I have a feeling with free agency coming and college championship week here, I think the draft is going to take the backseat here a little bit.
Maybe, but you know how these teams, the NFL just likes to poke its head into a lot of different things. And I mean, the NFL is always king, I feel like.
It's a year-round enterprise.
It really, really is. Now that you've had a little bit of time, Josh, to let the combine and everything sink in. Obviously, there's so many overreactions to certain performances. For example, what Anthony Richardson did, we all expected him to be this dynamic athlete, and he did dynamic athlete things. But now that the dust has settled a little bit, what were some of your big takeaways from the combine?
Yeah, I think it has to start with Anthony Richardson. The athletic performance that he did put on there in Indianapolis, running a 4.4 in the 40-yard dash is just kind of historic for his size at the quarterback position. So it was fantastic to see that athletic ability, but you kind of knew that he was that type of an athlete. What I really am curious about is how he performed in those interviews with teams over the course of the week. When they put him up on the board, was he able to identify what they were trying to probably trick him about on the whiteboard? Was he able to work through that, show how he would work through his progressions? Did he meet all of the requirements as far as the interview process is concerned? So if he was able to knock that out of the park, you're talking about a player that is probably the third quarterback in this class, you know, right there with Will Levis out of Kentucky. But really good week overall. I think we kind of saw the strengths and weaknesses of the class kind of identify themselves through the course of that week.
Josh, I want to talk about the wide receiver class, and we saw a flip in the betting markets. Quentin Hines was the prohibitive favorite to be the first wide receiver taken. That has changed now. Ohio State's Jackson Smith Enigma now the favorite. Did Quentin Hines hurt his stock here at the Combine? And do the wide receivers have the most to gain or lose by their 40 times?
I actually don't think Quentin Johnson hurt his stock at all because he's a very big wide receiver. He ran really fast. He tested explosive. You kind of saw what you wanted to see from one of those premier boundary wide receivers. You know, he's obviously going to have to show a little bit more at his pro day to really assert himself as that top wide receiver. But I think you were really optimistic about what he showed in Indianapolis. I thought he caught the ball well during on-field drills. But there's no denying the performance that Jackson Smith and Jigba put on. He was very fleet of foot. He was quick through his routes. All the stuff that we saw from his film for the Buckeyes, I think he kind of asserted himself as one of those top wide receivers in this class and probably moved ahead of Jordan Addison from USC, probably to the point where we're talking about either Johnson or Smith and Jigba being that first wide receiver off the board.
The big news that broke out there in Indy was Jalen Carter and the arrest warrant. He had to fly back home to Athens, Georgia, before he returned to Indianapolis to do the interview portion and some other things down there on site. But a lot of question marks about what that might mean for his draft stock once everything is said and done. How much do you feel that that'll impact who a player who everybody largely has felt is the best overall athlete in this draft class?
I think it may have a little bit of an impact, but I don't think it'll be significant. So you're talking about a range probably anywhere from number three to probably number eight there with the Falcons. Obviously, the quarterbacks and where they are taken is going to be a big part of that conversation as to where he is picked. But I don't think it's going to have too big of an impact on his stock at the end of the day because he's a fantastic player. I don't want to be insensitive to the situation, but I don't think that teams are going to hold that against him to the point where he falls into the latter half of the first round. Obviously, the interviews, once he came back, were going to be really important. How did he answer those questions? Mm-hmm. Did he continue to lie about what was, you know, his involvement on that night? those are the questions that I would like to get to the bottom of. But honestly, to this point, I don't think his stock is going to be affected that much.
I'm curious, are they even allowed to like ask those questions to him because it's an ongoing investigation? I don't even know.
I think he probably has a legal right not to answer.
Yeah, I would be very curious to hear if he did have to answer those questions because I don't know. It is in a private setting, so maybe it's a little bit different in that regard, but certainly something that he's not allowed to talk about publicly at the time.
Josh, is there one sleeper you have your eye on heading into the pro days and through the rest of the draft process?
Well, one name that I thought did really well at the NFL Combine was Princeton wide receiver Andre Yoshivas, a player that has great size. He has great speed. He tested explosively. He looked really good during the on-field drills. A year ago, we saw Christian Watson from North Dakota State. With his combination of size and speed, he rose up the draft boards ahead of draft night. And I think Yoshivas, probably not to the same extreme as Watson a year ago, but a player we're probably going to hear a lot more about on day two. But there's some guys that really have to, reclimate their stock after what we saw in Indianapolis as well. So kind of curious to see how guys like Clemson's Miles Murphy test at his pro day here in the next couple of weeks.
The Seattle Seahawks recently signed an extension to their quarterback, Geno Smith. And so I know I was very curious what that meant for them. Clearly a team that was in the quarterback market in the draft prior to signing that deal with Geno Smith. Do they still look to be one of those teams that's in the mix for one of these top tier guys?
I think what we really need to see is the guarantees and how they break down. Is this a contract that they can get out of after 2 years? Which is kind of the way that it seems outwardly, is that this is more of a short-term deal for Geno Smith than something that's going to lock him in long-term. Seattle has said that they're still in the quarterback market even after this contract, but at the same time, you wonder if that's just posturing. Are they trying to entice another team to move up in a trade situation to get one of those top quarterback prospects? I think Seattle should take a quarterback. They're saying that they're interested in a quarterback. But how interested? Is this just public posturing, or are they truly interested in the position? I think that's something that's going to be really interesting and something that we can probably learn a little bit more about when we see just how Geno Smith's contract breaks down.
Josh, do you think, the story of Anthony Richardson from 100-1 to being around 5-1 for the overall top pick and a heavy favorite to go top five and even top three, is Anthony Richardson a top three quarterback taken this year in this draft? And what realistic potential is there for him to be the number one overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, that's complicated because he's an incredible athlete. But when you look at his ability to read the field, his processing, all of that stuff, it's probably number four among those perceived top quarterback prospects. For me personally, it's still Alabama's Bryce Young, despite his lack of ideal size. C.J. Stroud from Ohio State had a fantastic combine experience as well. And then Kentucky's Will Levis really acquitted himself well in Indianapolis. Also, he did well during the on-field portion of the events, but I also heard that he interviewed really well over the course of the week. And he's got exposure to a pro-style offense already. So as much ground as Richardson probably made up athletically, I still think it's a little bit of a hurdle to become one of those top three quarterbacks, and especially one of those top two quarterbacks, because at the end of the day, I think Young and Stroud have probably done enough to distance themselves from the others, but I could see a team really being intrigued by his athletic potential and his fit in the right team. I mean, Seattle is a great fit, honestly, because you're talking about Geno Smith's contract possibly being short-term now. That's an ideal situation where you have a young player like Richardson with all of the potential in the world possibly coming in and learning behind Smith for a few years.
We've got about 45 seconds left with you here, Josh. The Texans are the odds-on favorite as of right now to actually make the pick at number one. Who do you see making the pick, and who do they get where things sit right now?
I think the Texans have to be in the conversation. I also think the Colts are probably in that conversation. And there's certainly a little bit of added incentive for those two franchises to move up to number one, because the reality is if you don't, then the other quarterback that you want is probably going to end up in your division. So if Houston does not trade up to number one, you risk the possibility that Indianapolis swoops into number one and takes the quarterback that they want.
Awesome stuff. Appreciate your time, Josh.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Josh Edwards, CBS Sports, doing great stuff over there. And that, what he said about the quarterback, the drop-off after Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, I completely agree with. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what I think. just matters what these general managers think. So it'll be fun to see how things play out come April.